What are we coming up on here?
Oh, this is tejuino con nieve estilo Guadalajara. This is the one I was telling you about. So this is different. It's a very like central Mexico tejuino. You'll find it in Nayarit, in Jalisco.
So I went on a little journey recently to find some of my favorite fermented drinks of Mexico right here on the streets of LA.
So we just, we're over here on Rosemead, I think the 19, in the Whittier Narrows recreational area. And we just tried some tejuino from a stand on the side of the road. There's a bunch of little stands, you know, not a lot of food options. I always, it's kind of very hit and miss here. You never know what you're going to see, but there's just a tradition of stands in this area.
There are spots like this all over Los Angeles where you'll meet roadside vendors who stay busy making drinks that some of their families have been making and serving from the same spot for decades.
What did you think about what we had from Señor Juan Lopez just now from Peña Nayarit, he said he was from?
It was very clean. It was like very really nice. There was like nice effervescence. But it did taste a lot more piloncillo than I did the maíz there. But it drank really nice. It was refreshing.
Yeah.
So I'm curious to see how this one is, this next one from Guadalajara.
Okay, let's try the estilo Guadalajara. We'll be right back.
Okay, so that's LA Times food editor Daniel Hernandez, and he was with Bryant Orozco, who's a big name in LA's bar scene.
We just tried tejuinos, tequileros, no sé qué. Tequileros, tejuino, and snack bar. Okay, let me just turn on the engine. And your assessment, Brian.
All right. That one, so interesting, they didn't put...
The two went out and tasted a lot of tepache, tejuino, and pulque. They're these old-school Mexican drinks long looked down upon by polite Mexican society because they're fermented. I mean, I had never even heard of them until I became a food critic because they're all specific to parts of Mexico, and that's why they're still not really known to Mexicans on both sides of the border. But that's changing.
Taste this, man. It's kind of perfect now, actually. Right?
That's good. But see, no bad.
Now these foggy, fizzy, funky drinks are becoming a low-key hit in the United States, and it seems everyone wants a sip. I'm Gustavo Arellano. You're listening to The Times, essential news from the LA Times. It's Friday, October 7th, 2022. Today, fermented Mexican beverages. They're having a moment right now, but it's a trend that's been bubbling up for thousands of years. Today, we're joined by my colleague, compa, food editor of the LA Times, Daniel Hernandez. Daniel, what's up, man?
Hey, Gustavo.
So earlier this summer, you wrote about tejuino and tepache and also another Mexican fermented drink called pulque. Why?
Well, the fact is I just started seeing it more and more around town in LA. And, you know, the more that Mexican culture, Mexican immigrant culture and identity sort of diffuses all over the region and all over Southern California. It's kind of one of those things that if you've been around Mexico enough, you just kind of start seeing, and it kind of my ears perked up and my taste buds perked up. And I honestly had been also searching for kind of suitable pulque, one of the drinks that I focus on here in LA. But I just thought, man, our readers and our audience, maybe many of them don't really know what these drinks are, how special and unique they are, how old they are. And so I just kind of dove in and decided to explore the state of fermented drinks from Mexico in LA.
We're out here at Pulques Don Jose, I guess. It doesn't even have a name. On a white truck, out of his white truck out here on Central and Olympic. Let's try some pulques.
Pulque es una bebida artesanal. Es una bebida artesanal que viene desde la época prehispánica en México.
Taste this, man. That's kind of perfect now, actually. Right?
That's good. But see, not that funk. That's not.
I love it.
Yeah.
It's a total trip because fermented drinks in Mexico go back thousands of years. But it's such a regional thing because there could be people, Mexicans, who have lived in Mexico their entire life and they've never even tasted some of these drinks.
Totally. Like, for example, in the state of Colima, there's a drink called tuba, and that's made out of the fermented sap of a palm. There, you know, cider is made in the state of Puebla. There's, you know, mountains up there where they grow tart apples and people make a drink out of that. And of course, pulque goes back to thousands and thousands and thousands of years before the arrival of Europeans on the shores of North America. And this is essentially just fermentation. People making wine thousands of years ago on the other side of the planet, or people making magoli in Korea with rice, fermenting rice. But you're right. There are instances, for example, my family is from Tijuana, Baja California. You know, like when I went into other parts of Mexico is when I first learned about tejuino, tepache, pulque, and so on. And when people crisscross the country, because there's actually a lot of internal migration in Mexico, they kind of are shocked and surprised to learn that there are all kinds of fermented drinks all over the country.
And when we talk about fermented drinks, the rough corollary, at least in American culture nowadays, would be something like kombucha.
Exactly. So the kombucha is the fermentation of, you know, a certain kind of tea. You wind up with this bubbly, fizzy, kind of tart, acidic drink that is really great with ice, is really refreshing, has lots of great probiotics, obviously, and antioxidants. It's good for you. It's good for your gut, as people in the health industry like to say. And so it makes sense that over time that there would be kind of this meeting of the minds over like the kombucha kind of health craze at like very fancy health food stores. And little by little, I also started noticing that certain Mexican fermented drinks were appearing alongside kombuchas in places like Erewhon, Whole Foods, and so on.
Yeah, until I became a food critic, like I had never heard of most of these fermented drinks. Pulque is like nationally known just because it has such a history with Mexico, but some of these other smaller ones. So when did drinks like tejuino and tepache start showing up in the United States?
That's a good question. I mean, I think that we could assume that largely with the great migrations from certain regions of Mexico. In the 1970s and 80s, a lot of people came up from Zacatecas, where your family's from Jalisco, from Nayarit, Durango, kind of Western Mexico. That presence is really strong and embedded and rich here in Southern California. And in Western Mexico, they drink a lot of tejuino. You know, tejuino is the fermentation of maize, corn, with piloncillo, with brown sugar. And it's fermented, it gets slushy, it gets brown, it's delicious. There's nothing that tastes like it. People add lime and ice, do a salt rim. On a hot day, it's perfect, right? So if people kind of want to relive that sensation, they found ways to do that here in LA. Pulque is kind of for more the central highlands part of the country, wherever people are making agave spirits like mezcal or tequila. You can theoretically also make pulque, but it's really known to be from like the central valleys, the valley that is the Valley of Mexico, Mexico City, etc. And so it's cool to see kind of the diversity of the geography of the country reflected in these drinks and reflected in the waves of Mexicanos who came north in search of a better life, right?
Coming up after the break, what exactly are these drinks, where to find them, and also the holy grail of Mexican alcohol that feels like spit, no other way to put it. But first, we ask listeners to tell us their stories about fermented Mexican drinks.
Hi, calling in regards to tejuino, tepache. I'm actually made tepache in the past. My grandma's told me stories about my grandpa, who I never met, him making garapiña. It's another thing, and tepache. And my grandma wanted me to make it because I'm a homebrewer. I make beer at home. So I looked up the recipe online, simple, made it. My grandma went back into the decades and remembered the times when her husband used to make it, my grandpa. So that was nice. And then I turned it around. I made a beer without any yeast. Instead, I added a tepache and I gave a six pack to my grandma. She doesn't like beer, but boy, does she love this beer.
So, Daniel, I started seeing these fermented Mexican beverages around 20 years ago in restaurants here in Southern California. And then maybe about 5 years ago, once you started seeing more street vendors in LA, I started seeing more, especially tejuino and tepache. But since the pandemic started, I've seen both of those everywhere. My God, even like in high-end restaurants, hipster bars, in cans. What happened?
You're right. I did notice that uptick as well. I think that one of the likely reasons is that a lot of people needed to fall back on something, and a lot of people got pushed into street vending by the pandemic shutdowns and protocols. A lot of people lost their jobs, not just Mexicanos, Asian immigrants, Salvadorans, Guatemalan Americans in the United States. Like, people just lost jobs, and people were kind of pushed into street vending or decided to explore it to supplement their income if they lost their jobs during the first part of the pandemic.
During the pandemic, because, you know, there wasn't anything else to do, I wanted to do, you know, tejuino, like, made with, like, whole corn. So I would take the corn, and I would just cook it with piloncillo. I would boil it down. I tried different methods. So this one, where I cooked with the piloncillo, it became like a mush. And I blended it, and I just threw it in a clay pot and fermented it. I fermented mine for about 5 days, and it came out really chunky. But it wasn't really the tejuino I was looking for.
So in pandemic, you started doing this.
Yeah.
But you grew up with it as well.
Yeah, I grew up drinking it. So it was more of a hobby. I just wanted to see if I could make it because
right. There
wasn't much going on.
Wow.
But again, yeah, I think that there was like a convergence in interest in fermented drinks and in what people were seeing on the street. And probably like some very kind of enterprising Mexicanos kind of figured it out and decided, well, let's try getting out there more. But you're right, they've also been around for a long time, kind of like for 20 years or more. Tepache is probably the most well-known, the easiest to make. You just ferment pineapple rinds in water with some spices if you want. And so I tried making tepache a couple times at home, even when I was bored in the pandemic. And so I think that that's really reflective of what the pandemic allowed or sort of pushed people to explore different areas of their knowledge base. Maybe a family had been making tejuino their whole lives and decide, well, maybe we should try this on the street kind of thing. But also restaurants, more restaurants are offering pulque, which, as you know, is really difficult to source and pretty esoteric to make. And so I think it's a really interesting boom and moment. People are definitely curious to learn more.
Daniel, we've been talking about all these drinks, but really haven't gotten into what they are. So maybe we should describe some of them. So let's start with the one that I see the most, tejuino. What is it and what's its story?
Tejuino is from Western Mexico. It is a rustic drink. You know, none of these drinks are made with preservatives or anything like that. You basically just boil down some corn kernel, add piloncillo, brown sugar. At a certain point, some people like to add lime. But the thing kind of boils down and is kind of cooks into this slush. It is then cooled. It is left to ferment a couple of days. And then when it's time to serve it, you have this foggy, brown, slushy thing that like looks appealing, but also maybe looks a little risky. And you just pour it over ice, mix it around, add maybe some rock salt and some more lime. Maybe put it in a rimmed glass, and you have tejuino.
Right. And there's some places like the place I was telling you in Islos and El Mercadito, they have like a very high acidity in their tejuino. And that's why some people will actually put nieve de limón to kind of counteract that acidity.
Right.
Or they just make it more sweeter. Also, this one was interesting too, because I didn't catch it. I don't know if you caught it. But I didn't see them put the limon in the salad in there.
I didn't see her do that either, no. Yeah. So it's kind of not really tejuino.
I mean, is no. I guess everyone has their own definitions of what tejuino is.
Right.
Also, this is tejuino number two, and I'm feeling like full. It's like, dude, all that masa is just like,
oh. It is como si llena.
Damn. You know?
I love tejuino. It has such a funk to it, but then it's cut by the piloncillo, the brown sugar, and then sometimes they'll put lime ice cream, and then it gives us like a citrus tone, and something about that combination it's one of the most refreshing drinks I've ever had. Like, it's just amazing.
Yeah, it's pretty great. When you have it here on the street somewhere on a very hot day, go down to the Whittier Narrows. There's a lot of vendors there that sell it in different levels of quality, I will say. But it's there, and it really almost kind of transports you back to like the coast of Nayarit or something. Like, it's pretty great.
Yeah, you could feel that breeze from like Jalisco or Nayarit or whatever. Just such a great drink. Okay, the next drink, tepache. What's tepache?
Tepache is a fermentation of pineapple. So I, for example, use pineapple in my green juice, and so I'll keep the rinds on occasion, let them dry out a little bit in the fridge, and then what you do is you put them in a mason jar, glass jar, cover it, with distilled water, some cinnamon, a little bit of piloncillo if you want, some star anise if you want, and even some people, I've seen some people use clove pieces. You let that ferment 2-3 days, and then it starts kind of getting a little bit of a bubble on top, a little bit of a fizz. The thing also kind of turns a little brownish, yellowish, and you chill that, and then you have this terrific, super like sweet, but also still funky fermented pineapple, quote, kombucha. And that's how really it's being marketed. It's kind of the more accessible of the three drinks that we featured in this article. It's easier to make, and it's kind of like easier for a novice drinker. And it really is a good thing. People have been drinking it for a long time in a lot of different parts of Mexico. And, you know, it's a great alternative to a soft drink, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, tepache, to me, the flavor is deeper. It's not as funky, but you mentioned the cloves, the star anise. Like, it has more of a spice, so it's almost like a tea in that sense, but not that light. But what's trippy to me about tepache, that's the one that, especially in the past couple of years, has a huge mainstream thing with some company that you wrote about called De La Calle.
Yeah, De La Calle is a really interesting company based here in L.A., that thought this is the next, literally the next kombucha craze. We're going to get ahead of this. And so they made up a really slick, very pretty campaign for their branding and for their marketing. And one of the co-owners is Mexicano. He grew up in Querétaro with his grandmother teaching him how to make tepache. And they make some kind of really interesting flavors. They kind of feel outlandish at first. But when you taste them, and we went and met with the company and tasted every single one of the varieties that they have like something like 8 or 9 now, and they have like a spicy chamoy one, they have a tamarindo style one, they have prickly pear one, it comes in like a super bright pink can, and they're pretty good. You know, these are non-alcoholic tepaches, and the alcohol content is something that we should also keep in mind, that you can have non-alcoholic fermented drinks, but you let the fermentation go long enough and at the right kind of levels and mixtures and proportions of ingredients, and you can start getting an alcoholic drink, really. But these are non-alcoholic. They're sold in not only liquor stores, but also regular markets and kind of upscale kind of health markets. And they're great. And if you want to make them alcoholic, you can mix those with like rum, tequila, mezcal, or kind of whatever you want. So it's interesting that there is going to be, and they're not the only company, you know, let's be clear. There are several now that are selling canned and bottled tepaches.
Why do you think tepache got this big rollout and not tejuino?
Probably, like I said, because it's kind of more accessible, I think. Mm. It's more similar in the mind of people to be able to compare to something that they know, like kombucha, for example. It's a little sweeter than tejuino. Tejuino is like a little funkier. And, you know, I don't know. It just like looks like, you know, it's clear. It's not like frothy.
More accessible.
It's more accessible, I think.
Yeah, they're both great, though. They're both great. But then we get to the most ancient Mexican fermented drink of them all, the most revered, really, pulque. We'll get into pulque right after another message from a loyal listener and then a quick break.
This message is for Gustavo. Hey, Gustavo, you mentioned you wanted to know a little bit of something about either pulque or tejuino or tepache. And, you know, my story is basically I grew up down in Guadalajara. And growing up, tejuino was the drink of choice for us on the street. You know, it was just one of those things where vendors would come by on their little bikes and, you know, sell it out of little containers. So it was tasty.
So, Daniel, we talked tepache, we talked tejuino, and they're great, but they both bow down to pulque, the most revered of all fermented Mexican drinks.
Yeah, pulque is, it's been called the drink of the gods.
That was a complete eureka moment. Like, I wanted to hug the guy. Like, it's good pulque.
La gente sabe cuando es pulque y sabe cuando no es. Son conocedores desde niños.
Pulque is associated with religious practices before the arrival of Europeans. Shamans or priests used them in different kinds of rituals. Pulque was given to very old people because it's full of nutrients and probiotics.
Y lo que tiene el pulque es que hace que que la gente se sienta mejor que que tomando alcohol y y cervezas porque este es más natural. Es orgánico.
It's also given sometimes to infants or mothers who are nursing. In Aztec society, which was incredibly regimented, strict, militaristic, and kind of like cultish society, pulque was only allowed in public on extremely special and rare occasions, just a couple of times a year. You'd probably be executed if you were ever caught drinking it on one of those non-days. And after conquest and colonialism, there was a real concerted effort by, you know, Spain, Germany, and so on, to sort of like phase out pulque in Mexican society and introduce and kind of like get Mexicans really into beer, which, not really knowing Mexicans, Carlo, you could have figured out that you could have both like the whole time. but it's a really interesting story that it was almost totally eradicated. And there has been a movement in recent kind of decades and years to revive pulque, to let it kind of reclaim a spot at the top echelon of fermented drinks in Mexico.
Aquí el pulque se hizo muy popular.
And, you know, a lot of young people, college students, like neo-indigenistas, if you want to call them that, neo-Mexicanists who want to elevate pulque and really bring attention to what an incredible and really unique drink that it is. You described it a little bit ago as having the consistency of saliva or spit, and that's very accurate. It's not for the faint-hearted. It's not for people who don't like taking risks in terms of foods that they try. There are thousands and thousands of microorganisms in a glass of pulque that are like not, you know, bad for you. And it's alcoholic, and it gives you a buzz unlike anything that I've ever had. And I can tell you that I've tried almost every spirit imaginable out there, and there's just nothing in the world like pulque.
No creo que tenga tanto alcohol como un trago o una cerveza. No creo que tenga tanto alcohol el pulque.
It is a nearly kind of hallucinatory, kind of happy high that this drink gives you. And it does make you feel connected over time, over centuries, over millennia, to practices that are native to this continent on the face of the earth.
Yeah, people love pulque so much that they'll reduce themselves to drinking pulque from a can. Have you ever had it from a can?
I have, and I've regretted it. It is totally disgusting. I'm not exaggerating. Pulque in a can is one of those things that you do kind of just want to spit out the instant you taste it. But I understand the impulse. Now, because pulque is sort of constantly in a state of fermentation, and because it goes bad very quickly, it has an extremely short shelf life. So for a lot of people, like, you can only really drink pulque in Mexico, ideally at a ranch. By the time it gets to a bar that sells only pulque, known as a pulqueria, somewhere in the soup of Mexico City, it's already kind of like not as good as it could be. So you really do have to like drink it immediately, almost just after fermentation, after it's been scraped from the inside of the agave. Let's remind people what pulque is. It is the fermented sap from the very core middle of the agave. And the artesanos who pull it out of the agave are called tlachiqueros. And they are incredibly skilled and talented, practicing traditions and practices that have been handed out to them over generations.
Yeah, trying to find fresh pulque in the United States is nearly impossible, even in LA. And people always say they know someone who knows someone, but almost never pans out. But you were able to find fresh pulque.
Yes. And so this is also a huge mystery. You meet some of the guys who are selling it on the street, and they're very cagey about how much they want to tell you about where the pulque is from. What one source did tell me, there are vendors that if you kind of ask around, they'll be like, yeah, I have pulque, or yeah, I have tepache. But the quality level, again, is really hit or miss. Pulque supposedly tastes better kind of like after the rainy season. But it's, you know, some people do try and sell it all year round. What we can assume And what our sources tell us is that some people are basically bringing pulque up from Mexico, trying to move it very quickly through the land border, because you can import a certain amount of liters of liquids and so on. And, you know, there's an effort to try to can pulque or bottle it. But again, it just doesn't taste the same. It doesn't taste fresh. You have to add a preservative, because if you seal pulque, it'll blow up whatever container it's in, frankly. And so no one's been able to achieve it, as far as I'm concerned, the taste level that you need for fresh pulque.
So Daniel, what was the hookup? Who's your pulque maker?
Well, there was this guy. There's a guy down there in the Mercado Olympic area. He's pretty vulnerable. He sells from a white truck. You know, he's kind of just in the general area. And I went to try his pulque over several times, over several months. And sometimes it was right on the money. Sometimes it was a little off.
The quality is extremely variable. And so sometimes it's just really poor. It just tastes like basically red wine vinegar or something. And other times it's like very flat. So it's just hard to get good pulque up here in LA. And it's kind of a mystery about where to get some good pulque, you know? And so
he makes his own curados. So he'll do a curado de guayaba. And a curado is when you flavor the pulque. Plain pulque, it tends to be white, viscous. But in Mexico, there is a practice of curing, or kind of like soaking flavors inside a pulque to give it different colors and different textures. So a pretty popular one, my personal favorite, is guayaba. There's also a mango pulque people make often. And then people just go buck wild and do like savory pulques, like a celery, tomato. One of my all-time favorites was peanut. One of the most popular ones is oatmeal. So this vendor makes his own curados, and he sells them from the back of a truck on Alameda and Olympic.
So once I came across this truck, I was like, oh my God, like, let me just pull up. I saw the sign, just like if we were in Mexico or in the Global South, you know, which is right here in LA. Like, this reminds me that the Global South is right here, you know, but through the foods and through what we eat and drink. And so once I saw it, I was like, oh, it was like a gift from the gods. Like, you know, this is the best that I've found so far at street level in the city of LA. Here, I'm a very industrial, pretty grimy part of downtown LA near the Flower District and near Mercado Olympic, which is like the Piñata District.
And it really does feel like, again, you're kind of transported back to Mexico. I spent a couple of instances just hanging out there with him all morning, and people coming by, I'm just like, you know, I've been drinking this since I was little. Or one woman told me that she makes bread, pan de pulque, she makes bread with it. You know, other guys are kind of showing up, and there's always this kind of like social kind of play that happens around pulque culture. People kind of like making jokes, double meaning, triple meaning jokes. It's a very lively, ribbing culture that is also really interesting. And you'll be in this kind of microscopic section of LA and instantly be connected to that. It was a pretty amazing experience to report out this piece.
No. Esto me lo voy a llevar. Es que no, lo vas a tirar, mentira.
No.
You mentioned that pulque is having a bit of a renaissance in Mexico, but do you ever see pulque getting big in the United States?
I think that is the great, you know, the holy grail, if you want to say. That is the city on the hill. Can someone popularize pulque, mass produce it at a consistent level, and commercialize and market it to gringo, quote, eaters, to American eaters? Now, American eaters have become more and more willing to like eat the way Mexicanos tell them to eat. And so little by little, I do think that there will be an opening at some point with like the right science and like the right entrepreneur and like the right tachiquero to make us some pulque here in the U.S. But as far as I know, there is no production of it. There is a company in Chicago that is trying to make it. And I may have another story down the road about that. But everything that I've tasted so far that comes in a can just does not taste like pulque the way it should be tasted. And it kind of also lends a question like, should it be eventually canned and commercialized? Or should it always remain a thing that you can only have in the moment from a hand that has perfected it? And it is this fleeting,
not just a consuming and eating experience, but a fleeting kind of like cultural and social experience.
Isn't that the existential question of Mexican food, though? Do we mass produce it and make millions off of it, or just keep it to nosotros?
Exactly. I mean, look at mezcal and tequila. The productions of those, every celebrity in Hollywood is trying to get a brand and a label going, and there's fears that we might tap out the species of agaves from overproduction. So it's a huge question, a huge tension. For now, only kind of very food curious people are out there looking for good pulque.
Daniel, thank you so much for this conversation.
Thank you, Gustavo. Thank you.
And that's it for this episode of The Times, essential news from the LA Times. David Toledo, Syria Henry, and Kinsey Moreland were the jefes on this episode, and Mario Diaz mixed and mastered it. Our show is produced by Shannon Lin, Denise Guerra, Kasha Prosalian, David Toledo, and Ashley Brown. Our editorial assistant is Madeline Amato. Our engineers are Mario Diaz, Mark Nieto, and Mike Heflin, some mighty M's. Our editor is Kinsey Moreland. Our executive producers are Jasmine Aguilera, Shani Hilton, and Hiba El-Urbani, and our theme music is by Andrew Epin. And hey, we're building a Dia de los Muertos audio altar this year and would love to include your memories of your loved ones. Call 619-800-0717, 619-800-0717, and leave us a voicemail with your own ofrendas. Tell us who you are, where you live, and then tell us a great story about a friend, a family member, someone dear to you who has passed on and joined the ancestors. We want to air an episode with those stories around Day of the Dead. Thanks in advance, and again, the number 619-800-0717. I'm Gustavo Arellano. We'll be back next week with all the news and desmadre. Gracias. Enjoy the pulque.